Transmissions from Innsmouth, the Conqueror Worm Podcast.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, boys, girls, ladies, gentlemen, and everything between. This is your friend and compatriot, Milan Jeftek. Terrible things have happened. Men have lived, and men have died. Loved ones lost, and a city decimated. Although, even in this darkness, hope arises, and we rebuild. Sorry it's been such a long time since I last uploaded an episode. A lot has happened, and, well, I haven't had the proper emotional fortitude within me to tell you what happened. But I will. I will. And this is just a story that happened to me a while ago. A story of how I met a cherubim and got him high for the first time. I'm not exactly sure how long ago this story happened, but I'm pretty sure it was about 5 to maybe 3 years ago, but I can't be sure. Basically, the story goes, I was standing outside a local Wendy's in front of a bus stop, just smoking a cigarette, minding my own business, just looking for a score, my hands in my leather jacket, and, you know, I'm just not bothering nobody, just relaxing, taking in the sight, you know, the sights of this burnt-out suburban wasteland. I wasn't in Innsmouth. I believe this was maybe New York or San Francisco, maybe Boston. I can't be sure. But, yeah, it was somewhere in the late afternoon. The sun was going down, and the sky was, a comforting type of grayish red. I was just, you know, I had no plans for the night, and sometimes you just gotta embrace these unknowable, peaceful moments. Just not listening to any music, just taking it all in. And then suddenly I tasted the oh-so-annoying taste of trans-dimensional distortion in the air. It's like having tapioca and molten metal injected into your cerebellum, but not in a good way. And so I focus at a certain point in the time-space continuum, and I'm not quite sure who's coming through, but there's going to be an apparition, a creature of higher stuff, higher quantum stuff that will soon appear. Me being of demonic blood and Russian blood as well, I can see these types of things, but yeah. So there erupts this golden pathway between worlds in front of me. Next to the bus stop, this blinding gold light erupts from it, and I see a figure step through, a gigantic figure, nearly, God, I don't know how tall, it was much taller than the bus stop, maybe 7, 8, 9 feet tall, just this huge hulking figure. With about what was it, 6 to 8 wings, large behind its back, large muscular arms, with a giant flaming sword in one, the head of a bull, the head of a lion, the head of a man, the head of a hawk, and the head of an angel atop its weird malformed shoulders. And it had eyes all over its body, all over its wings, and all over its biceps and chest, and those eyes glowed with a color not known to mortal man. And yes, this creature, this fearsome, angelic creature, stood before me, smoking and sweaty with the sap of the heavens, and boomed in an ear-splitting voice that no mortal could hear. The holy Metatron of the Almighty One has finally gone silent and does not gibber in its billion voices the commands of the Almighty One. Why is this demon? And I'm looking at this guy, and I don't really need this right now. I was just having such a wonderful time appraising the simple things of life. And here come pops this giant, hulking, sweaty, naked cherubim with a giant flaming sword asking me stupid questions. I sigh and turn away and just ignore him, hoping that he'd get bored of me and go bother somebody else. But he booms again in his multi-voiced shriek. Do not ignore me, foul creature of the pit, for I, the grand warrior Angel Zimazel, demand your answers. Speak, bastard of the worm-headed cow. He then pokes me with his goddamn fiery sword. I turn him and I snap, like, don't fucking poke me with that thing, and don't call me creature of the bottomless pit, which I may be, but I have the seed of Adam in me, so I at least deserve some respect from you, oh great and mighty one. And fuck you. If you would have asked nicely, maybe I would have told you if I actually knew the fucking answer, which I fucking don't. So, but, you know, fuck you, Zimazel, whatever the fuck your name is, I'm going. So I turn around and just storm off, just disgusted by the manners of this guy, because, like, I mean, like, you'd think they teach him manners up in heaven, but no, they're gonna act all high and mighty. So I'm walking away, my hands in my pockets, and this guy goes, wait, please, I have no one else to talk to. I turn, and I look at this guy. I'm like, dude, did you just fucking apologize to me? Sorta? The angel scratches behind one of its heads, the lion one, I believe it was, and just looks abashed and says that he's sorry. And I'm looking at this guy, halfway turned away. I'm like, angels don't fucking apologize to half-breed demon spawn like me. Something must be fucking up. So I come up to him and I said, dude, you want to get high? The angel looks down at me and nods. And so, yeah, me and him are sitting at this bus stop in a temporal time and space it's so hard to explain to mortals. It's basically a bubble where normal creatures can't see or hear us. It's kind of a cross-dimensional pocket universe created just for that brief time, for that brief conversation. But anyway, that's not important. Basically, we're sitting there smoking a joint, me and this giant angel. And this guy, he's, you know, he hasn't tried weed before, but, you know, all of his heads take a puff, and I just roll myself another joint, you know, thinking, like, he's not gonna leave me anything, and, you know, whatever, I'm not greedy. And I say, like, so what's up, dude? You beam down here from your cloud palace / brothel house to talk to me and get high? I'm like, what's up? And he says, coughs and, you know, he says, "Well, the Metatron has stopped talking." And I say, like, "Well, how the fuck should I, like, I don't know what this is. I mean, I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. I just walk around and do things. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of billions of other devils that you could have gone to ask this question, and they would have given you the answer, because I don't know what the fuck is going on, even. So why'd you come to see me in particular?" The angel looks away. "It's because I sell the best shit, is that it?" The angel turns back and looks at me, then looks away. "Yeah, that's what I thought. So, what's the problem?"
"The Metatron has gone silent," he says.
And I go, "Well, it's a matter of time. I mean, there is no god, right? So the motherfucker had to run out of material or die or something." The angel looks at me, and the look on his fucking face was hysterical.
"You're an atheist?"
he asks me. And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's just staring at me with all his faces are just painted with this shocked, odd expression of disbelief. And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm an atheist. You know, what of it?" And he keeps looking at me, just not saying anything. And then he just points at himself and points at me, and he just says, "How?" And I go, "Well, you know, I'm sure I exist and you exist. You know, kind of. You're more a compilation of belief and, you know, that's taken on a personality and is beginning to become somewhat sentient and separate from its original concept. But, yeah, I mean, that was exactly what my father was, essentially. But, I mean, there's never been a god. All these man-made deities. Sure, you know, they claim to have created the universe. Every single one of them claims to have created the universe from the bodies of their dead ancestors, or, you know, snapped it into existence in a millisecond or whatever, or created it after, like, 7 days of bullshitting around. Every one of these fucking gods claims to do so. And yet, the fucking humans realize that that's not true. Science is involved. There's a technical proficiency in the creation of the universe, but it's completely non-sentient, essentially. It's just a completely natural process without the necessity of any sort of higher dimensional being to guide it, as it were. And the angel just looks at me and says, like, "Heresy!" And I'm like, "Dude, don't give me that shit." And he takes another puff and he's like, "Yeah, okay, that's true." And I go, "Look, I mean, all these things are just composites of belief that grow sentient. They're just huge parasites that linger on the edge of reality and suck off the belief from large crowds of scared and terrified idiots." He looks at me and says, "Scared and terrified is not a good..." And I go, tell him to shut the fuck up, because I'm high, and it's not his fucking place to interrupt me and point out my grammatical errors in talking. But yeah. I mean, I tell him that, look, all these huge godly parasites that the humans dream up, you know, they just keep feeding them, you know, engorging them with, you know, so much belief they do manage to get some sort of grasp over the physical world, just very, very basic stuff, like making a storm kind of not really worse or less worse. They really don't have much power at all, except they just know how to fuck around with people's minds, and Like, you know, my dad always says, one, the human beings are horrible fucking bastards that only need the presence of a devil to do what they want, because it's not our corrupting influence. We don't have that shit. Is that if there is a devil around, the human being has an excuse to blame it for its own misdeeds. And, you know, that's the thing. These God things, all they had to do was just put the right thoughts in the right kind of people, and, you know, an Inquisition there, an ethnic cleansing here. You know, what's a couple of genocides between friends? You know, grab society and make believers. Make them. You know, they could get away with it in the old days because there was nothing fucking to do in the desert, or, you know, the winter snows would, you know, engorge your hull, and, you know, you had nothing to do but tell stories about mystical super beings that would solve all your problems for you. And all these fuckers just feed off that shit, and, you know, they just grow big and fat and swollen until fucking technology is invented, you know, and until technology evolves to a certain point that, you know, people can do shit now. And the angel's just looking at me. I know I'm losing him. His eyes are kind of glazing over. But, you know, at least the one's in the lion's head, but that one's fucked up real bad. And he says, like, but they're real. God is real. And I say, real is a very loose term, because, I mean, reality, I don't know. It's so hard to explain, and I say to him, like, dude, you should know most of this stuff, and I know you do. You're just pulling my fucking chain. You just want to have a fucking conversation with people you don't know. I mean, why would you come here? Why would you not go to some other angel who's older than you or whatever? And the angel just kind of looks away and says, I don't have many friends. Most of the angels I know have begun to disappear or turn into some generic looking thing. People don't have creativity anymore. And that's true. I mean, I tell him, if you read the fucking Bible, as you fucking well know, there's some fucked up shit there. And the guy goes, yeah. I mean, even if this God was quote-unquote real, why would you worship him? He took your fucking balls and bollocks away. He took your... Dude, you know, you guys, you fucking angel used to fuck all the time, making your half-angel, half-human babies down on Earth. And he fucking drowned them off. He drowned all your fucking babies and took your balls away. This guy's a fucking cunt. Why would you worship him? Why would you do what he fucking wants? I mean, you... Why? And the angel looks at me and says, like, the very worst thing, this fucker is... Like, the guy that we have now, but, you know, I don't know where he's gone now, but he was originally a fucking war god for this old desert tribe. Just a fucking war god. And he was part of a larger pantheon, and you know what he fucking did? He slaughtered everyone else in that fucking pantheon and commanded the scribes to retell/rewrite all the classic myths with him in place of all the other gods. And I go, fuck, really? And he goes, yeah, it was fucking horrifying. And I'm like, dude, why didn't you fucking do something? And he goes, like, dude, after a certain point, people start believing it, and the belief, you know, gather strength, and you can't change shit like that. And I go, like, fuck, man, that's terrible. But he looks at me and says, like, but dude, like, I don't know where he's gone. I mean, you know, there are still fucking a lot of people who believe in him. I mean, take America. I mean, nearly 70% still believe in him, like 75%. And I go, it used to be fucking 80. Thanks to guys like fucking Christopher Hitchens and Dawkins and whatever, a lot of people, you know, a lot of fucking humans are not buying the bullshit anymore. And the angel sighs and says, yeah, that's true.
I still don't think that he would have died just of losing 10% of belief. And I go, no, I don't think he's dead. I think he just, you know... I don't know where he's gone, but my guess, my fucking guess, is that your god has been eaten by Cthulhu. And he looks at me and says, what? And I go, like Cthulhu. I mean, I've just recently got into the religion, and, well, the old ones are not exactly gods. They're real, for one. And, well, Cthulhu enjoys devouring lesser deities, as it were. And the angel looks at me and he goes, like, really? And I go, yeah, Cthulhu ate your god, dude. Sorry. And the angel just looks off into the distance and goes, you really think that? And I go, maybe. I don't know. He had some... I don't know. Maybe. Did you see any large tentacles erupting from the ground around where you were? You know, hideous, undescribable bug / crab / octopus-like things, you know, erupting from holes in time and space and, you know, trying to take over the celestial plane. And the angel just looks off into the distance and goes, fuck, Cthulhu ate my god. And I go, yep, Cthulhu ate Jehovah, the god of the Bible, the Jews, and Islam. Yep. And the angel just kind of looks a bit freaked out, and I go, I try to calm him down because, you know, he's losing his eye. And I go, dude, like, it's okay, dude. Like, I mean, you can do what you fucking want now. You don't have to be dicks anymore. I mean, can't you just break in into the belief matrix and rewrite the fact that you guys have dicks now? Or maybe if you want to get rid of just do something useful, go get reborn as a human being. I mean, you know, it's great being part human. You know, go fly to some, you know, drunk teenage girl's fetus and hope to God that she doesn't abort your ass. And yeah, you know, try living as a human for a little while. Maybe you'd like it. The angel looks down at me, takes a puff and says, you know, Milan, I've never swore or did drugs before I met you. I never thought of heresy or anything really. I just believed because I was created to believe. I was created to obey. But now I... with God being devoured by Cthulhu, I don't know what to do with this freedom. And for a horrible half-breed demon creature, an abomination on this earth, I gotta say, you're pretty cool. I smile and kind of take his quasi-insulting compliment with stride, and I go, you know, you're pretty cool too, mate. You're pretty cool too. So what are you going to do? And the angel just looks at me and says, I don't know. He takes a puff and flies off. I pop the trans-dimensional distortion that was hiding us from the mortal realm, and time starts working again. I see I've missed my sunset. But I suppose the night would embrace me lovingly. The cherubim was nothing more but a distant shadow in the distance, with his fiery sword thrown aside. I picked it up. It was a huge fucking thing. Pretty cool. And I walked off with it, wishing the cherubim, the angel without a god, his luck. And I went off into the night,
smoking my joint and holding a cherubim's flaming sword under my arm. Maybe I could pawn it for some extra cash. I don't know.
Greetings and salutations! You are listening to the pirate radio broadcast of Jebediah Springsteen. I am broadcasting my voice through the vast distances of the heavens and straight into your ear holes. You are welcome. Today, dear children, men, women, and hyper-intelligent dogs whose owners left the radio on for you to listen to while home alone, I will describe to you my journey through time and space. Now, I know what you are thinking, and trust me, this isn't your average run-of-the-mill trip through time. I did not attempt to maintain my own existence by performing some rock song by a boy named Johnny. I did not run off to the future and pick flowers. No, dear listener. I spent my time traveling in useful matters, attempting to better the world. I think once we've reached the end of this broadcast, you will agree with me. Let us begin with how I managed this incredible feat. It was with the assistance of a dear friend, an amazing artist. You all, of course, know the genius poet and all-around artist Ian Harrington, with his wonderfully deep and world-shaking single-word poems. I still weep every time I think of his poem, titled Ball. I could spend hours talking about that poem and never scratch the surface of its value as the greatest work of art in human history, but I am not going to insult the poem by trying. I will tell you of my travels instead. Well, dear audience, it turns out that Ian is a time traveler. He collects time machines, in fact. Well, not really. He actually possesses only a single time machine, which he can morph into other time machines. It all began one morning while I was feeding my menagerie their special blend of meat, which is your average high-end animal feed mix of alien organs and mystic growth hormone. Anyway, while serving this food to my two-story high lion Ricky, I heard the unmistakable sound of the time vortex being broken. I expected to see your typical future men asking me to save the day. I'm sure we've all been through this, so I'll not go into it. But instead, I turned to see Ian. He was dressed in blue boots and a vest, wearing a top hat and a sword, and he had on the most interesting pair of spectacles I've ever seen. You see, they were in the fashion of those wrapped behind the ears pairs of glasses, but instead of lenses, there were clocks with exposed gears ticking away. I asked him why he had come to see me, and he said that he wanted to reward me for my most recent stunning review of his poetry. He offered to take me on a trip through time and space. Immediately I jumped into his time machine. It was wooden and had an immaculate crystal and a brass handle which he used to control it. He asked where I wanted to go first, and I told him that I wanted to journey to some place that was sad and tragic, where I could do some real good. A great kindness to those who suffered. Ian claimed to know exactly the place, and he pulled the lever back. Before my eyes, the entire universe, all of time and space, began to wind backwards. I saw Ricky shrink down to the size of a tractor, then back to a newborn pup, no bigger than a hybrid car. Then time began to go back at an even faster rate. The buildings around us began to be deconstructed. The grass field upon which it stood began to grow out of proportion, and then exploded with trees. But these too shrunk, and snow descended upon the land. that was white as far as the eye could see, and we began to slow to a stop. I became aware that my eyes were aching. Ian looked at me and explained that the drastic change of light from the rising and setting of the sun could cause horrible headaches, which is why most time travelers wear something that covers their eyes. He opened the glove box and handed me a sleek black glass visor. I put it to my eyes and it suddenly encased my head in a shiny black polished chrome helmet. I looked around inside this glorious device and could see holographic images alerting me about various objects and such in my immediate environment. There was also a small readout that said we were in the era of the last great ice age. I took off the helmet and asked Ian what we were doing here. He beckoned for me to follow him, and we soon walked over a small hill to find on the other side a tiny hairy elephant. It was then I realized that it was a woolly mammoth. The thing couldn't have been more than a month or two old. Ian looked at me and removed his hat. He said that this was the last of the woolly mammoths. Its parents had gone out to search for food and had just been murdered by our ancient ancestors. My blood became to rush with hatred at my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great- looked into this poor creature's eyes, and I saw fear. It was afraid that I was going to kill it, like my kin had done with its entire race. I let out a deep breath and slowly approached the poor creature. It tried feebly to run away, but I caught up with it and put my arms around it. I sat there in the ancient, long-melted snow, crying with the child mammoth in my arms for several hours. And then I decided to do the only thing I knew that was right. I quickly grabbed the baby by the horns and used all my strength to lift it in the air, and then I began to twist. I heard the neck snap under its own weight, and I put the creature down. It is here that things got kind of awkward. As I stared at the animal on the ground, I began to hear it whimper. I had failed in my mercy killing. Quickly, I ran to it and opened my mouth as wide as I could. I brought my teeth down upon its throat and began to torque my head about violently, ripping with my teeth and pulling with my neck. Blood filled my mouth instantly, and so did the cool, snow-covered hair. And it is at this point I realized why our ancestors had hunted these majestic creatures to extinction. They were delicious. The uncooked meat tasted better than the finest sushi, and the blood was almost like a barbecue sauce. This, mixed in with the cool chill of the frozen hair, made the entire thing into one exotic dessert. I gorged myself upon the child mammoth, and I regret nothing. In fact, at one point, I looked up from my meal and saw myself also eating from a different section of the mammoth. I looked to Ian and asked if this was some kind of paradox occurring. He said that due to the vast size of the universe, that any casualty paradox we create really doesn't matter because of how inconsequential we are. He began to say he'd show me an example, but suddenly I heard a gunshot and saw his head get blown off. Enraged, I looked in the direction of the gunshot and saw Ian, another version of him at least, putting away a pistol. He looked to me and said, "See?" I then looked to the other version of myself as he ate the mammoth, and he looked up to me and asked if I was going to finish stripping a baby rib. I told myself no and handed the rib to me. I stood and told Ian that I wanted to travel more. He told me to put on my visor and then grab my shoulder while pressing a button on a pocket which he was wearing. Suddenly, we materialized on a gigantic luxury ship. I looked up and down the main deck, and it seemed to become the horizon. I asked Ian where we were, and he told me we were aboard the Titanic. I asked why, and he said he'd never been. Ian told me to have fun while he went gambling. I explored the ship, walking up and down its decks. I saw countless numbers of lifeboats. I am quite the history buff, as my loyal listeners know, and so I did what anyone who cared about historical order would do. I quickly released a handful of empty lifeboats into the icy water. Ian said that people don't create paradoxes, but surely lifeboats could. As I descended to the lower decks, I saw that the ship was contradicting the history books even more. The lower class people were living in the lap of luxury. They even had gigantic fireplaces of pure iron, which they were selfishly stuffing with far more coal than any fireplace could possibly need. I hit some of these poorly dressed socialites, seriously, who wear sailor suits around above the head, and made quick work of throwing all their coal into one of the fireplaces on the right side of this huge decadent room. As I explored the ship more, I began seeing many tacky rubber rings that just had to go. I get it. The boat is called the Titanic. You don't have to tie a cheaply made sign to it every 20 feet. You know, I always thought that the Victorian era had more class than this. I also began to wonder what kind of captain this boat had. Why was he heading so headlong on the port side? Learn to drive, people! I ran into Ian and told him I wasn't really enjoying myself, and we got into a classy AMC DeLorean, which was covered in the most intricate pattern of buttons and wires. We drove down the deck of the ship and straight for the railings, passing many prudish passengers on the way. I shouted out the window that men were driving here and that they all needed to learn basic automobile safety. I then put on my visor, which morphed into the helmet, and once again, we disappeared into the vortex of time and space. I saw clocks winding past, great historical moments passing us by, as meaningless as grains of sand through an hourglass. Sorry, that felt a bit trite. The moments passed like droplets of shit from a diarrhea-stricken rabbit. We landed in the heart of a city that my helmet told me was Berlin before the war. Ian told me that we were just making a quick food run. He told me that he knew of a German baker who crafted the greatest handmade strudel ever. He would know. I walked the streets of pre-war Berlin and found some local color. There was an alley in which local artists were selling their works. As you know, I consider myself a bit of an art critic, and decided to take a look. I also wanted a souvenir from this fantastic journey, one that would last for years, unlike the mammoth meat that I filled a plastic bag with. As I walked up and down the alley, I noted a fair amount of decent work. Some of it lacked vision, but other pieces were quite intricate. Then I came upon an utter eyesore. I almost couldn't stand to look at it. Boldly raising my voice, I cried out to the alley, asking who produced this painting. A small man with a ridiculously thin moustache raised his hand. I won't go into detail since what I said was fairly harsh, but I told him how horrid his artwork was and that he needed to find a new career instantly. I bought the painting next to his and left the alley, but not before spitting on his travesty of a piece. Ian and I met back up, and he asked me if I was ready to go, as he handed me some strudel. I told him I'd like to take a cigarette break first. Ian doesn't like smokers, and he told me that the only way he'd let me is if I first gave him my mammoth meat. I decided against this, and we prepared to travel. This time we both drank a fluid that transported us through the field of time and space. When we stopped, my helmet had no idea where we were, so I asked Ian. He was unsure as well. He told me to wait in that spot while he went to check. Looking out to the nearest window, I could tell that we were on some kind of aerial vessel that was far too large to be an aeroplane. I puzzled for a moment, trying to figure it out myself. But then a thought dawned on me, and I quickly lit up a cigarette. I was only able to get a few drags in it before I heard Ian coming. I quickly exhaled the smoke in my lungs and tossed the cigarette in the nearest waste bin. Ian grabbed me by the arm, and we began to run. I asked him where we were going, but he told me there wasn't enough time to explain. Before I knew it, we were on the roof of this flying machine. It was large and gray. I followed Ian as he jumped off the top of this strange ship, and we began to fall through time, landing back in my menagerie. Ian looked at me and told me we'd just gotten off the Hindenburg with moments to spare. I breathed a sigh of relief. He thanked me for traveling with him. I told him it was so much fun, and that we honestly should do it again sometime. Ian tipped his hat, then began messing with some strange device that contained a miniature hourglass on the end of a necklace he wore before he disappeared. So, in conclusion, dear listeners, I showed a delicious animal kindness. I taught some tasteless rich people a lesson and preserved history. I put a failed artist on a good path, and I narrowly escaped a fiery doom. I hope you see the good I've done for all of mankind. You'll have to excuse me. I think I have a guest.